Raghunandan. I am with the Delhi Science Forum and its sister organization. We are part of the All India People Science Network. My background is in engineering. I have done my research in social anthropology, so you'll know where some of this is coming from. I must confess I've slightly modified my presentation from what I had originally prepared, going by yesterday's discussions. I hope I've not disappointed anybody who was involved in inviting me to this presentation. What I'm going to present here is a follow-up. Yesterday you would have heard other presentations from the People Science Movement talking about different aspects of our work. I will be speaking to you today on the work that the People Science Movement and I personally do in constructing alternative developmental models. I'll start by posing some issues. The first is, we all know, and we spoke about this in considerable detail yesterday, about the problems of production of scientific knowledge, that it's part of the capitalist social formation process and structures. The issue that I have is, why are we singling out science in this discussion? I think this is there for all knowledge. All knowledge is generated from within the social formation, engages in reproduction of that social formation, and therefore all knowledge and science are subject to struggles and contestations in these processes as well. I also believe that the relationship of science and technology, I think, was perhaps not adequately explored yesterday. It's something that I think needs a little more thought. Sometimes these terms are used interchangeably, which I think is perhaps not correct. I think in different ways, this simplistic notion that science comes first and leads to technology, I think those days are over. Today, you wouldn't be able to think of science without technology, and vice versa. It's become a chicken and egg kind of issue. I also believe that technology has to be addressed somewhat differently, because technology is intrinsically social. It has the social embedded inside the technology. And the second aspect, which I think is important, is that there are always options in technology. You have different ways of doing the same thing. You want to produce energy, there are 10 different ways of producing energy. But each option has very significant societal implications. And therefore, options in technology are something which are very important for us to consider. I'd like to pose some questions through this discussion, and I hope that the presentation would throw some light on some of these. The first is, can problems faced by the people, at least some of the problems, can they be tackled through different science and technology choices? Just like we talk of solar energy rather than nuclear energy, are there such scientific technological solutions to some problems faced by the people? And linked with this, I think, is a question which came up yesterday, but which in India is a major debate today. And that is science, sometimes called Western science, is science itself really the enemy? Is that is what is standing in the way of tackling these problems? And what is the relationship between people's knowledge and people's skills, and I'd like to emphasize this distinction, and modern science and technology? What role can scientists or scientific institutions play? And lastly, if some solutions or good options are found, will they represent good science, or are these always compromise solutions? And linked with this is the issue, can what are assumed to be natural laws of linear progress be challenged at all times. I'll quickly set the setting for what I'm going to give you through some examples of work that we've done. The setting is briefly in India, that we have about more than 70% of our population living in rural areas. There is a declining employment in agriculture. Agricultural employment is either stagnant or going down. There is the well-known phenomenon of jobless growth in the organized sector. Some call it job loss growth. Rural artisans, potters, leather workers, processors of food, agro processors, etc., small farmers, agricultural labor, they are the carriers of traditional scientific knowledge, technical skills in our society. But the capitalist path of industrial development that has been adopted in my country has bypassed this entire knowledge, human resource base and capability over the last 5 or 6 decades. As a result of which today, rural India is impoverished, it's de-industrialized, de-skilled, and in many ways constitutes an internal colony. We've grown up being taught that cotton from India used to be taken to Britain and come back as cloth. We are doing the same thing within our country between the rural areas and the metropolitan industrial centers. So in this context, I'll just explore some of the work that we've done in addressing issues that arise from this. I'll take one example of work that we have been doing addressing problems faced by rural artisanal potters. Now, we have over 400,000 such potters in our country. They work with what is called common clay, red clay that we see in roof tiles, etc. These clays vitrify at about 800 degrees centigrade, so which limits the kind of products that you can make with them. As a result of which, you've got poor quality, poor productivity through the age-old techniques which are used by artisanal potters, a lot of drudgery, and lastly, two major problems of sustainability which have recently come, and those are dwindling resources of clay and dwindling resources of fuel wood used by the potters to fire their products. But surprisingly, R&D institutions in our country have not addressed the scientific and technological problems of common clay, while they have addressed all the problems of advanced ceramics and China clay and so on. So our organization, in collaboration with a premier research institution, took up this problem through a participatory action research program with rural potters and evolved a new set of technologies which started with transforming the common clay from clay that vitrifies at 800 degrees by admixtures and so on to raise the vitrification point to about 1050 degrees centigrade, rendering it what's called medium grade clay. And these transformations also involve degrees of mechanization, shifting from the old hand-thrown wheel to a mechanized wheel, moving from manual pugging of the clay to one done by machines, moving from firewood-based firing in a clamp to a gas-fired kiln, which can use petroleum gas, natural gas, biogas, whichever is available. As a result of which, potters can now make ceramic-grade products rather than only low-temperature. Similarly, we work in the field of non-edible oils, with large numbers of tree-borne oil materials available in our country. You'd be surprised to know that despite a huge volume of these materials, very, very little of this is actually used in the country. The most popular is neem, and we spoke about that yesterday in the context of patents. Even that, only 10% is used. But industry ignores these materials, which are resources available with the people, uses solvent extraction for, and India is a net importer of the oils generated from this. And once again, a set of technologies for use for extraction of oils from the tree-borne materials and from aromatic grasses and so on through distillation through local enterprises. Over 250 such rural enterprises now work in different parts of the country, in different technology sectors. And I just want to emphasize these are not small, trivial sectors in the economy. Each of these sectors, edible oils, non-edible oils, leather, represent about $2 billion worth of commerce in the country every year. Importantly, we've done this through collaborative programs of research with leading research institutions of our country. Unfortunately, in my country, very little of such research is done in the university system. It's mostly done in the state sector research institutions set up for this. And these are the kinds of linkages that have been built up through this process, which are importantly also pulling in funding from the state for these what we call societal programs. And therefore, some concluding remarks. First, I'd just like to clarify before some questions are asked on this. These are not Owensian models. We're not trying to take over the economy by constructing these models on the ground. Rather, they are exemplars of an alternative strategy that could be built, which are sustainable, which are equitable, and most importantly, which are low entropy systems involving production as close to the source of raw material as possible. And we believe they are part of the struggle against globalization and the dominant capitalist path of development. I also believe that working in defiance of the conventional assumptions, economies of scale, whether centralized production and decentralized distribution is the way to go, is intellectually challenging for scientists and technologists working in these institutions. Distributed network production is today recognized as a frontier area of engineering practice. And we believe our experience shows that what are generally called externalities, such as equity, low energy use, sustainability, in fact, can be built in to research itself, can be internalized into the research. One of the early practitioners of this kind of technology development, Dr. C.V. Seshadri, made what I consider to be a very significant remark when he said, "Equity is good science." Thank you.